Hey, what's up? It's Radio Free Nintendo, episode 123, and I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, back from a week off due to election birthday party crap. Of course, we have in the studio, as it were today, Greg Lay, James Jones, and John Lindemann.
Hey.
Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
You guys seem somewhat less excited than I am to be doing the show.
I'm feeling off, so...
Know what they say about absence.
I'm a little bit subdued tonight, Johnny. I don't know. I'm just...
Oh,
just
it's okay.
Mellow.
I have enough enthusiasm for all of us combined.
Work
I'm
all
sure.
day, come in.
I'll explain that in a minute. Before we start on new business, I thought I would kind of let the listeners know... some interesting things that have happened to me in the past week. Yesterday, I passed my PhD comprehensive exam.
Hotness.
So now I'm officially a PhD candidate. Yes, I'm going for my doctorate in geekdom.
So what's the next step after this, Johnny?
I have to, do some research.
Okay.
And write some papers.
About some
for
stuff,
the next
whatever.
Couple years.
So
yeah.
this was actually to get into the PhD program, right? Or...
Not really. It's more of like a status check. It's like a milestone to make sure that you're on the right track, and basically like you have a committee, and they listen to your presentation and your kind of your plans for what you're going to do, and you know if they think it's a bad plan or if it's not realistic, they'll kind of correct you. You know, put
so,
you on a different path.
Yeah. Well, so this wasn't your actual defense, right? Like your
No. Okay. The defense will be in a couple years. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you're on your way to providing an original contribution to knowledge.
Sort of, yeah. I hope so.
Good to know.
I mean, as if I don't already every week on this podcast.
I know.
At this point, I'm hoping I can actually finish college before my 10-year high school reunion. actually, it looks like I probably won't. I'll probably be at my reunion, and everybody will be like, oh, what are you up to these days? I'll say, I'm still in school.
Well, screw that. You can tell them you're like an aerospace engineer / rocket scientist, and you won't be lying. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually not a rocket scientist anymore, but I used to be.
Yeah, that's right. It got old. I mean, it gets old. Being
no,
this smart
it's just
gets
not,
old, people. It just gets boring.
It's just not what I wanted to do. But anyway... another interesting thing, very interesting thing that happened to me was this past weekend I went skydiving for the first time. That
as
was
you can see, he had a terrible accident.
That was quite psychotic. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I've wanted to do it for a long time, and it was a little expensive. I mean, I did like a tandem jump, you know, so there's no training involved. They just strap you into a guy who knows what he's doing, and he basically jumps off for the two of you. all you can do is try not to go into total system shock. but it was quite an experience. I do recommend it. I'd like to do it again, but it'll probably be quite a while before I do it again, just finances. And also I want to have more time to soak it in and get used to the idea that I even actually did it. Yeah, and then I was feeling so... super confident from those two things that today I asked out this really hot girl and she said yes. So wish me luck on that in the near future.
Is that a similarly momentous to the other two for you, Johnny?
Could be. No, I don't want to put too much importance on it, but it's exciting for me. I don't date a lot, so
ooh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. So before we get into new business, I mean, I don't really talk to you guys that much outside of the podcast. I mean, how's the fall going? Are you guys like totally overwhelmed with games or other things? Or
yeah, well, interestingly enough, the one little event in my life is I got a new job actually, which is a big deal because the place where I've worked there for 9 years now.
For as long as I've known you.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much like since I've gotten out of college. I mean, I had like a brief job doing tech support. For about a year, and then I got the job at the company that I currently work at. And this
so,
new,
are you serving up burgers at the Varsity?
No, I'm not actually. It's interesting because this is a company that actually does virtual world stuff, which is pretty cool.
Hmm.
I don't know if I can actually drop their name around here. I won't. But it's
so. Are you working on Second Life now?
No, it is
Third
not.
Life?
It is not Second Life. I will say that much.
Okay.
But yep, it's a similar concept to that. in the Atlanta area. So I'm looking forward to that.
Is that why you started playing Warhammer?
No, that was entirely different. Even though it is kind of like a nice segue, though, because you know it's into the whole job that I'm going to be doing, because it's, you know, a lot of the same kind of concepts. But yep, so I'm looking forward to that. I start actually on December the 1st. So that's
wow! Congratulations, man. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I, James, you got a new job not too long ago, right?
Yeah, a few months back. I'm probably not allowed to talk about where I work, but I moved into the position. But 2 months ago, I moved into the position of software developer. So I went through their academy, graduated, moved into software developer, got stuck on Power Builder 9, which is considerably painful.
You're not making games, are you?
No. If you make games in Power Builder, you're a terrible person.
I don't even know what that
is. It's like the worst technology in existence.
Oh. And like, what does it do though? Is it for like what is it?
It's application. It's for rapid application development. It's basically designed to be integrated with the Sybase database system.
Okay.
So they're so linked together that you can develop relatively quickly, but they're so linked together it's a pain in the ass to do anything.
Okay.
But I actually have not been bogged down in the gaming glut, although I do have four games that I'm still going through, because I'm saving up, because I believe I will soon be buying a house.
Nice.
Wow, nice.
Yes, less than a year out of college, which would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's kind of a dump, though, but that's fine, because I would have made it a dump anyway, so it's good. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to do as much work to make it a dump. It just starts that way.
And Greg, I'm assuming that your comments will be focusing on football.
Yes, I am actually. I'm applying for a job. I'm applying for the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. there will be no further discussion anyway. Let's just say it hurts. It hurts bad, and that's
look,
that.
I know about football and pain. I spent 2 weeks.
I recommend you start drinking.
No.
Now.
Never.
I sat through a 2-week losing streak where both my college and pro team were losing. I'd watch one blow it on Saturday, then watch the next one blow it on Sunday.
All right, well, I guess we better actually start the show in earnest with new business, and I have Greg going first.
Yep, so it's been a pretty quiet week for games for me, actually. I finished up Order of Ecclesia, I talked about that more last week, so I don't really have any particular appetite to talk about it again. I got a new review copy in just today, Legend of Spyro, Dawn of the Dragon.
Uh-oh.
For DS. Yeah, I haven't played it very much. I've just played like the tutorial level and stuff.
That sounds very bad.
I don't really have a lot to say about it yet. I may well never have that much to say about it outside of the confines of the review. So we'll move on. One thing I do every week is I compile a European release list for the site that I send off to our Profiles man. And every now and again, especially at this time of the year, in the torrent of shovelware, there is a title that just shines out and speaks to you. And I had to share this with you, what probably is almost certainly the single greatest video game title.
I should point out for our listeners that if we think shovelware is bad in the States, in Europe it is abysmal.
Oh, yeah.
It is unfathomable
until
how
you've
bad
you've seen, like,
is
My Makeup and My This,
and
That. And,
and, like, three of the worst shovelware publishers in the world are all in Europe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and they've just recently started branching out into American operations.
Can't wait.
It's bad. But anyway, every now and again, there's something that just grabs you, and I had to share this. This is what I believe is the best title in history. It's called Pass the Pigs, Let the Good Swines Roll. That is just, I mean, wow.
Oh, my.
I mean, fact, this is from THQ, so it's like not not a tiny, tiny publisher. But
so...
Because Pass the Pigs just wasn't catchy enough.
No,
so
is
Carly going to make sure you get this game?
There had to be a... Oh, I wish. Yeah,
maybe they saw Capcom's title for Chop Till You Drop, and they said, oh, we can do better than that.
Oh, we can do way better.
Yeah, I think it's time for some European PR there, Greg. You know, you got to contact them.
Yeah, THQ, I would like to let the good swine roll.
Yes.
Send us your review
copy. Sweet!
That's pretty awesome. But yeah, so other than that, actually one really interesting bit of gaming news I wanted to bring up here was that apparently, according to Famitsu, Donkey Kong Jungle Beat for the Wii is actually going to be more different than you might think. Yeah. It's got, like, new levels, it's got little tweaks to the levels, and it's got, like, a more traditional controlling scheme. It's not just going to emulate the bongos with shaking. It is going to have motion controls for, like, punching. So I assume those bits where you did, like, the sort of barrel roll on the drums will be, like, for when you're bashing, when you get onto a big enemy and you have to sort of keep beating until it dies, like, that sort of thing will be motion control.
But the actual movement is controlled by the joystick.
By the joystick, exactly. So that's really quite intriguing.
Pretty huge
just
change.
The fact that it has new content as well is cool. Because I think a couple of weeks ago, you say, oh, you know, they could do Mary Sunshine and fix the camera. And I was like, well, they're not going to make any changes that fundamental. But I mean, if you're going to have extra content in something, then, you know, that could well happen, I suppose, if they ever did go to Mary Sunshine one day.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff. I'm very supportive of this. I think Jungle Beat needs to be played by about 20 times more people than have currently played it. And this sounds like they're actually taking this seriously. I was really afraid they were just going to port the game and basically do a really haphazard mapping of the controls to the to motion, and that would be terrible. So I think controlling Donkey Kong with the joystick is better than banging your Wii remote and nunchuck in the air all the time, but I'm really hoping they give you the option to use the bongos
Well, especially because it has new content now, it'd be really nice to play that with the bongos.
I will buy that shit all over again if they let me use my bongos.
No, I mean, I barely paid anything for Jungle Beat. I got it very, very cheap because it rapidly sort of became this fairly sort of plentiful stock, you know, just unsold copies at import stores.
Yeah, it was like Virtual Boys lying around.
So I'd be more than willing to pay a decent price for it again. And do you think they're like designs that weren't finished that they've gone back and sort of touched up and put in, or do you think they've actually made levels from scratch?
I don't know.
I'm willing to bet that they probably didn't start from scratch. I feel like they probably are just trying to get this game out there to almost make back what they spent on it originally.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, they should. I mean, and, you know, beyond that, it's just, it is a masterpiece. And, you know, if whatever they have to do to get people's attention and get people to actually play it. I mean, you know, I think they should retitle it Mario Galaxy Zero. seriously, whatever they need to do to get people to play it, because
although
it's
Mary Galaxy
so good.
Didn't sell as well as I'd like.
Yeah, I know, but it's going to be a catalog title, you know, especially over the Christmas season, as a lot of people get Wii's for the first time. Anything with Mario in the title is going to get their attention, and they'll go pick that up. So, all right, Mr. Lindemann, you're next up.
Yeah, I'm a victim of the avalanche, Johnny. I gotta say,
That's good.
It's great, actually. There's a lot of stuff. Well, first I'll start off talking about the stuff I have on Nintendo platforms. I actually got a review copy of Line Rider 2. Now, if anybody that's read the site lately, Zach Miller actually he did a review of Line Rider on the DS, and he completely panned it.
Yeah.
And Line Rider 2, it's amazing. It's amazingly sloppy. So I was going to use bad, but it's not exactly bad.
It's amazingly terrible.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it was a flash game, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause it was a good flash game too. It was a interesting concept.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's a flash game you can still play on your Wii browser.
Yeah. And the funniest thing about Line Rider 2 is that first off. You know, I mean, the concept of the game is that, you know, it's all this winter theme, and you have a little guy on a sled, and you have a certain ramp kind of course that you have to draw out for him. There'll be gaps in it, and you just fill in the gaps, and you want to get him to the goal, right? Pretty simple concept. As a flash game, I mean, you can just, you know, for anybody that hasn't played it, it's very, I mean, I can just imagine it's probably a single screen, and, you know, your guy's at the left, the goal is at the right, do whatever you can to get him there. Yeah. The funniest thing about the Wii one is that there is 5 seconds of load time in between each of those screens.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so literally, you sit there and, you know, like, especially the place where it's the worst is right at the start of the game, you know, when it gives you that really bad first impression. Because, I mean,
this is a DS cart, right?
No, this is a Wii game.
Okay, I said, thank God.
Yeah.
Load time on a DS, I would have just turn off the podcast and gone into a rage.
No, it's just, well, the thing is, it's even crazier on the Wii, just because there should be no load time in this game whatsoever. I mean, this is the kind of game where you could load the whole thing onto your Wii.
Into the RAM.
Yeah, into the RAM of it and run it.
Like, you remember Animal Crossing on GameCube, how you could, once the game booted up, you could actually open the case and take the disc out and keep playing it for hours?
Yeah.
this is even worse than that, because, I mean, the game is so much simpler. So you fill in the gaps in any course, and then, you click the go button, and the guy slides. And
he
goes up to the goal, and it's like, okay, you know, it gives you the check mark for beating it, and then it loads for 5 seconds. I don't even know what the hell it's doing. It just sits there and loads. And another thing is that when you install it, you have to have a mandatory 128 blocks on your Wii.
What?
Oh, it's one of those. It's one of the memory cards. The save file just, like, sets aside. It's sort of like Smash Brothers, right?
Yeah. They just assume you're going to create tons of levels.
Yeah, and it's 128 for Smash Brothers as well, so that's the kind of ballpark you're talking about. It's pretty big.
Your actual save game, I think, is 4 blocks. But mandatory, you have to install this 128 block save game file.
What? Did you have to clean the fridge to start playing Line Rider?
Yes, I did, my man.
That's
beautiful.
Talk about, you know, all effort, no reward. That's brutal.
And here he goes. He's going down the hill, and he face plant.
Alright, so anything better than Line Rider 2?
What could be better than Line Rider 2?
Well, I got Korg DS10 for the DS, which is neat.
You were really looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to it. Man, it is... it's intimidating. I mean, you actually... I warned you, man. It's a musical instrument.
It's intense.
I'm going to have to sit down and spend some real time with that on the John, if you know what I'm saying.
Spend
some time on the throne.
Referring to itself as the third person now.
It's already become a jackass DJ.
Yes. it's definitely, I mean, if you're thinking it's something that you can just pick up and start bashing out beats on, I mean, no, it's not. But still, it's very impressive in terms of what it can do. Off on non-Nintendo platforms, I'm still playing Warhammer. I'm pretty much addicted to that.
oh, dear.
And let's see, what else? Gears of War 2, Fallout 3, Resistance 2.
Holy crap.
It's
all
ridiculous.
Of it?
Oh, yeah. I got them all. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I have. No. I was going to get Mirror's Edge, but I'm actually not going to get that just because I have so much other crap.
What?
Yeah. I'm not going to get that.
I assume you mean for now.
Yeah,
you would go back to it, would you?
I might. I'll probably wait until I see it cheap. I mean, supposedly the single game campaign is only 6 hours, so.
Yeah, that's kind of turned me off of picking it up right away. So I think I'm with you. I'll either wait until it's cheaper or just rent it at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, I really want to play it, but it doesn't sound like the greatest investment, you know.
Yep.
I like how I've been bashed on this podcast before for saying a game is too short. Multiple times.
Mm-hmm. It just depends. I mean, I think a 6-hour DS game is totally... In fact, I'm going to talk about one. I just gave it a really high review. But a 6-hour $60 Xbox game is a little harder to stomach for me. So it would have to be an amazing 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people bitch about Portal, but Portal's 15, 20 bucks. It's even less than that now. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it was a full price game to begin with, you know, I mean, so it depends a lot, you know.
Yeah.
It may be a great game, but that doesn't necessarily mean I feel okay spending full price on it.
Mm-hmm. Johnny, I also picked up Dragon Quest IV. They had it really cheap on Amazon. So.
Oh, you're going to have fun with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It might take you a while to get into it. I think the early chapters are kind of shitty, mm-hmm. Just because it feels really repetitive. It's like once you finally pick up some momentum and you like start to get some good armor and you know it feels like you're kind of figuring things out, it starts a new chapter and you have to start all the way back at level one with the Oak Club, you know.
Mm-hmm. Club.
Once you finally get past those initial chapters and you get to the final chapter where
like
it's actually like 30 hours long,
yeah,
then it really gets addictive.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, they just announced Dragon Quest V coming to North America February, I think.
Yeah, because I was wondering about
that. Yeah, so it's not taking that long at all. I'm pretty excited about it. That's Well, that's the one I haven't played. 5 and 6, and mm-hmm. 7. I don't think I'll ever play 7, but 5 and 6 I do want to play.
And you are the Dragon Quest man, 7. Johnny.
Yeah, well, I'm one of them. I mean, there's a lot of people who like it, obviously.
Yeah, there's several million actually. But
yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Cool. Well, congratulations on your purchase, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a big day. I was like, I got it for $20. It was like their deal of the day, and I was like, holy shit.
That's awesome.
Yep.
You're going to get way more than your money's worth out of that.
Yep.
That's excellent. Okay, James, you are next, sir.
All right. Well, I already talked about my embargoed video game last week, but since I was giving impressions, it was okay. It was okay because I didn't give any sort of review content. I just discussed what's in the game, which I'm...
Can you tell us what game that was?
That game...
Because I haven't heard it yet.
Luminous Arc 2.
Yeah,
right?
Luminous Arc 2. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I said is like the most linear game in existence. It's continued to be the most linear game in existence, so I'm not really going to talk about it because it hasn't given me anything to talk about. what? Except for the fact that it appears the amount of voice acting is... continually decreasing as the game goes on.
Front loaded.
Which, but based on hearing Nick and Chezza hear it as I was playing it during one of Greg's problems last week, is probably a good thing. Because they were distraught when they heard it. But, so what I have been playing is I still have my 360 games that I'm working my way through. And I'm going on to game number 2 now. After I gave my disclaimer last week on NCAA 2K8 after College Hoops 2K8. Damn it, I screwed the game title up. My disclaimer was I screwed it up the week before, so I'm going to screw it up this week just to add on to screwing it up. The game I've been playing the most this week of the three is Assassin's Creed.
Word.
Which, you're not going to say word in a minute, I feel it's kind of overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's not nearly as open world as I made it out to be, because in fact, it is kind of linear. You know, you don't get to just travel the world as you want. You complete a mission, and all of a sudden you're zapped back into this sort of ad hoc, based in the present day story they kind of slapped on top of it. Which mm-hmm. I'm kind of disappointed about. I kind of wanted to be able to just go around after I completed a mission and see what happened. Instead, you have to...
You can go anywhere at any time.
Yeah, I know, but it's sort of
I think
like,
that's the definition of open world, sort
but it's
of.
Not,
I mean, you don't have to go to the
not
city that they
of open
tell
world
you.
Because open world means you can go explore at any point and do what you want to do. You are actually stuck in the confines of when they zap you out to talk to you about whatever brainwave machine they've got going on.
Are you seriously complaining about that? Those are like 5 minutes long each.
No,
when you go back to the
like
present
it.
Day.
I want to be able to go around and do what I want to do at my own pace.
All you have—it's basically a cutscene. You go listen to some people talk, and then you go back to the thing. You get on the table, and you go back to the past. And then for the next 8 hours, or however long it takes,
8 hours
to do the next mission. Well, I'm just saying you can take as long as you want. It's a lot longer than that, but you can take as long as you want to do the mission. So if you don't want to just plow through the story, you could go off to Damascus or do whatever you want to do.
My point is, I want to be able to, after I complete a mission, because the city does go batshit crazy after you complete a mission. I want to be able to walk around and see that.
Well, you can't walk around because they're chasing you, though.
You can walk around if you don't feel like any need to be stealthy, which you don't really need to be because you're still like crazy badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of felt
You'll find that it gets a lot harder, though, later on. Like, the guys who chase you, they're a lot smarter, and they do a lot more damage.
Yeah, the first guys
hit you,
the first guys are morons. But
they are.
I'm
but it
like
does get more challenging,
five,
for sure.
I think. I'm part of the way through the fourth, fifth assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it feels like they'll randomly decide, hey, this guy's an assassin because I'm riding my horse fast or something crazy like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like
I think the speed thing's pretty annoying. Like,
yeah.
You know, they don't like you to be running, or they don't like you to ride your horse faster than like the slowest possible
yeah,
speed.
Yeah, it's like I walk.
That's
I,
annoying. But
I walk past
when you're actually
horse.
In the city, it's not so bad. I
no,
think.
I walk past my horse on regular speed. They're like, "Get him! He's a murderer!" But
yeah, but like when I'm out in the countryside, I would pretty much just ignore the guys. Come on and chase me. Like, I'm going to get where I'm going before you catch up with me.
Yeah, that is really ridiculous. But in the city, they usually don't care if you're climbing up a wall.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed weird to me, but whatever. I don't know. I just feel like the game would be cooler if it put more emphasis on stealth. I mean, it's still fun. I just wish, you know, you could complete some of these kills without basically having to kill all their bodyguards.
Yeah. Well, you can. I mean, it is possible. Like, I actually did one assassination where I didn't kill any of the guards, basically. I climbed into this, sort of like miniature fortress that the guy was standing inside of. You know, it was like a little market, but it had walls all the way around it. I climbed up one of the walls, got inside of it, hung down, and basically did like a drop kill where I dropped on top of him and stabbed him with my knife on the way down. He never even saw me. Yeah, and I actually got an achievement for it on the 360. I mean, you don't have to like plow through there brute force style and kill everything. It is definitely possible to kind of sneak in there and do it a different way.
Well, because I think a good example was...
It's harder.
...was the doctor, where you have to go into the Templar hospital and kill him off. And I feel
Yeah, I don't think you can do that one very stealthy, but no. Maybe there is a way.
Like, it feels like it should be set up to be stealthy, though, because there are like 80,000 fucking guards in there. But if you come anywhere near the guy, he announces you're an assassin. It's like, how does he know? He reads...
Yeah.
But the amazing thing about that game, though, is he can see that, but if you're walking with clerics, despite the fact you have a big-ass sword hanging out, nobody asks any questions. Every time I do that, it makes me laugh. Like,
there's
oh,
a certain suspension of disbelief, I think, in Assassin's Creed.
Well, that's how it was back then, man. It was like, you know, don't ask, don't tell kind of thing. You know?
See, I kind of wish it was more like Thief, the Thief games, where it was not in your best interest to go one-on-one with somebody. Mm-hmm. It, like, if you got caught, you were a dead man. Because that's kind of what I was going in expecting. I mean, it's still fun. I just wish it wasn't like, if I hold down the R trigger and then press A when they swing their swords, I win every battle. Which would be the parry move.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that easy. Especially later on with some of the bosses, you can't just do that.
Oh, yeah, the bosses you can't do that too. You have to just pound on them for a while.
But one thing you should try. This is really interesting, and it's a good skill to learn for late in the game because it's extremely useful towards the end. Is doing counterattacks with your hidden blade instead of your sword.
Yeah, I've done them a couple times.
It's really challenging because you can't actually block attacks, so you basically get one chance, and if you miss, they're gonna hit you for a lot of damage.
Yeah.
But the timing, you know, is not easy. But if you get it, you kill them in one hit, and it looks awesome.
Yeah, because he jams the knife into their foot and then slashes up their body.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah. The throwing knives were kind of stealthy for a while, until I realized that most of the time I'd end up hitting some civilian. Like, I was in Damascus, and I was just throwing them at guards as they walked by. Like, just to be a jackass. I'm just walking there.
What a surprise.
Boom, boom. And every time I'd hit, like, some civilian who walked in front of it, I'm like, couldn't you see there's a knife coming at him? God, get out of the way.
Stupid uncanny valley bastards.
I killed like 7 civilians before I hit one guard.
Wow.
Game does not like that.
You're not a good aimer, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good game, but there are some things about it that I just kind of wish were, I don't know, a little bit more assassin-y.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the sequel because I feel like they're going to be keenly aware of those criticisms that people are making about it, and I'm hoping they kind of go the extra mile, you know, and really kind of take it up to the next level and do a much better job. Because, I mean, you know, it's not nearly a flawless game. But for me, the quality of the experience, it just had, like, this overall really amazing feel to it that I'm not sure if I've ever played a game quite like that before. And it just really grabbed me. And I love the story of all the present day stuff and going back and trying to like kind of solve the mystery of why are you here and what are they going after? You know, just where am I and what's going on here? I mean, I love that stuff. So, I don't know.
I do want to note, though, their eagle eye technique. They not only did they steal the graphical style from Twilight Princess, they even used the same sound effect of going in and out of it. The whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah.
It is. I was like, wow, this is just like Wolf Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay.
Well, anything else?
Yeah, the other... I've already talked about two of the games. I'll name the third game. You all can talk about it if you want. It was Crackdown.
Yeah, you can talk about it next week.
Okay. Which I've been trying to catch when you're online and get you to play it.
Both. Oh, yeah. Well, just send me an email or find me on AIM is the best thing. And
all right.
Because I'm not on. I haven't been on Xbox Live very much the past week. I've been. Well, you'll hear why in a sec. But I would like to play co-op in that. But I'm at the end of the game. I beat it, so it might be a little awkward if you're really early. Because John and I had that problem when we tried to play.
I'm in the third part of the city already.
Oh, okay. You'll be okay.
I blitzed through the first two parts and then had to go back and sort of level up a little bit. And the other thing I've played, the last thing, it was the Mirror's Edge demo, which if you get good at it, is 2.5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fast freaking demo. But
yeah, it's fun.
It is fun. It is a fun demo. I am very excited about that game, even if it is 6 hours, because I have a feeling I will sit down and play it straight through multiple times and just in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the kind of thing I do. That's the kind of games I enjoy playing. It's very different. I've never played anything quite like that.
Well, I think it has a time attack mode, doesn't it?
It does have a time attack mode, yes. Yeah,
which makes perfect sense if the game's pretty quick.
Yeah, but I think it's a level-based time attack mode, not like a whole game-based.
Really? That kind of sucks. That sucks.
I think it is sort of like, partitioned out.
Yeah.
Sequence by sequence. But I read on Penny Arcade today that if you pre-order the full game, you get a code to unlock the time trial
in the
mode
demo.
In the demo.
Yes.
Yeah, I got that, actually.
Oh, okay. Yep. Nice. Well, even though... Oh, so you got the code, and then you canceled your pre-order.
Yeah.
So you get the super demo without actually having to pay anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, nice. That's sweet, dude. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well played.
Thank you.
I do think that game is going to be awesome, though. I really do.
Yeah, I'm eager to play it for sure. All right, so I'm going to wrap up new business, and I've got 2 weeks' worth of stuff here, so bear with me, but I'll try to go fast through this. I'm reviewing Sam & Max Episode 1 for the Wii, and I was really looking forward to trying it. I do like the old PC-style adventure games. We had a whole feature topic about it once, and I never played the original Sam & Max, and I never played these when they were on PC, but... You know, it seems like a really good fit for Wii, and I do like that kind of game. And I have not been loving it so far. Let's put it that way. The first couple episodes really are not very funny at all.
Oh.
I think it's, like, really shitty writing. It's just, like, it's, like, very bland, kind of, like, 90s sitcom kind of humor. I mean, you know, if I was 12, I might think some of it was funny, but as it is, I just don't. The weird thing about it is that everything has voice acting.
Yeah.
Everything the game. It's just you spend so much time just sitting there and watching the characters talk to each other. And I mean, large portions of the game are basically dialogue menus where you go through. It's almost like BioWare style, where you're going through this, you know, 4-layer deep menu of dialogue options, and you have to figure out the correct sequence to say these things to solve a puzzle.
And it's all
spoken?
And
every single thing you choose is all spoken.
Oh.
And, I mean, in some ways it's impressive how much voice acting is in there, but... And it's not that the voice acting is bad. Some of the characters are a little grating, like these soda popper kids. They all have, like, really high-pitched, squeaky...
Intentional.
Terrible... Yeah, it is intentional. It's also obnoxious, and when you've listened to them for an hour... It's just too much. It's just like, I just start skipping the dialogue, seriously. I don't know, to me, the fact that they talk so much, it really slows down the pace of the game, and it brings so much focus on what they're actually saying, and the problem there is that the dialogue really isn't that funny. I mean, every now and then they say something that's pretty funny, but that's like, you know, that's, there's so much padding in between the jokes because they have to say everything. They have to move the plot forward with just pure exposition, you know. They just have to describe every single thing in the environment that you click on. And most of it's really not that funny. So it just feels like the game just drones on and on. It just never shuts up, kind of like me sometimes. But I just don't want that in a video game. I was talking to Chris Kohler about it because I know he's a fan of this series, you know, and of Telltale Games. I think he's a pretty big fan of the Strong Bad stuff on WiiWare, too. And I said, like, can you explain to me why people like this? Because I'm not really enjoying it so far. And he said, well, which episodes have you played? And I said, I just finished the second one, so I've played the first two out of six that are on the disc. And he said, okay, well, those are definitely the worst. And
yeah,
so he recommended... he recommended that I skip forward to the fourth one, which is Abe Lincoln Must Die.
That one is funny.
Yeah, and it is a lot funnier than the first two. I mean, I don't think it's hilarious, but I think it does have its moments. And overall, it's just kind of more fun than the first two. So I skipped the third one, and then he also recommended I play the fifth one, which is like Reality 2.0, because he said it has a lot of jokes about the internet and video games.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try that one too, and I think I'll probably review it after that point. But I mean, it could very well be that my review basically says like the first half of this season sucks and the second half is a lot better. So the nice thing is it just gives you a menu at the beginning. You don't really have to play the first couple episodes if you don't want to. I definitely would not play through them again. I really did not enjoy them at all. I mean, I just forced myself through them. It does seem to show signs that it gets better towards the end, so I'm not as down on it as I was a few days ago. And the other thing I should say about it real quick is that the Wii port of it blows. I mean,
does it?
It is technically it is a giant turd. The graphics are pretty bad. I mean, I think they're the same as they were on the PC. It was never meant to be like a beauty queen.
No,
but it's like 2 years later. Now it's on Wii. It looks really dated, and not only that, but you know, I don't have a huge problem with that, but I do have a problem when this thing is pushing pretty low quality graphics and the frame rate is still going nuts.
Are you serious?
It runs it runs really poorly. And the other main thing I have is that the movement where you kind of like click to move the characters from one place to another, the pathing on that is really terrible. So like if you click somewhere and the game's not really sure exactly where you want it to go, like if instead of clicking on the floor, I click on the wall right above the floor, instead of kind of, you know, just projecting that down to the floor and saying, okay, he must have wanted us to go over here in this general area, the characters will run completely the opposite way.
Oh, yeah. They did that the PC version.
And it drives me crazy.
It probably wasn't
as bad really
bad.
It's way worse than Zack and Wiki. Way worse.
It probably wasn't as bad in the PC version because it was mouse-controlled versus the Wii Remote.
Well, I mean, they really aren't that much different. The problem is the Wii Remote's a little bit less precise.
Right.
But the control method is completely independent from what I'm talking about. This is a programming issue. The characters just they don't know where you're trying to tell them to go. And it's really stupid character movement system. But yeah, the game has a lot of technical problems, like weird little pauses for it to load up the next piece of dialogue when you click on something. It's just totally inexcusable presentation. It's just really badly programmed. But it has some redeeming qualities, so I'm going to play it a little more before I write my review. The other game I did finish my review, I posted it today actually, the day we recorded this, is Spider-Man Web of Shadows for DS. And I think this is the third Spider-Man game for DS that I've reviewed. It's the sixth one that's been released for DS in 5 years.
You know what we really need?
And
a Spider-Man game.
Yeah. Well, this is by far the best. In fact, I would say this is probably the best Spider-Man game that's been made in years for any system. Well, it's really good.
How far back do you mean years? Because if I recall correctly, the one for the second movie was supposed to be pretty good.
It is. That was on GameCube, and it's very unpolished, but the design of it is really fun. And I like that one a lot. I pull it out and play it on my GameCube or on my Wii every now and then. But this one is great. I mean, it's a 2D game. It's strictly 2D game with like sort of 3D graphics, but it's designed exactly like a Metroid game. So it's about nonlinear exploration, upgrading your abilities so you can get to places that you couldn't get to before. And
how does one upgrade their spider sense? Get bit by more spiders?
No, you're not really upgrading Spider-Man's powers, and it's not like he starts out as Peter Parker and you collect powers and he becomes Spider-Man by
collect
the end.
Spiders.
He starts as Spider-Man, but
can you like upgrade your grandparents or your aunt and uncle whoever the, or aunt like Auntie M or whoever it is?
That's funny.
Aunt May, you are seriously cramping my style.
No, but the way it works is like, you know, like in the beginning, there are all these big items that are blocking certain areas, and your web isn't strong enough to pull them off, but you get an upgrade and your web becomes stronger, so now you can pull them off. So most of the upgrades that you get don't really change what you can actually do. They just kind of let you get to a place you couldn't get to before. But the game is just so much fun to play. The controls are absolutely excellent. Really fast, really smooth. You can pretty much do anything that you would want to do. Like, if you're hanging on the ceiling, and it controls with the buttons. There's almost no touch screen. It's just for this little mini game when you die. That's the only touchscreen stuff. Whereas Spider-Man 3, which I reviewed last year on DS, was controlled entirely with the touchscreen. Yes. So this is a different developer. It's a totally different kind of game. It plays exactly like Metroid, except even faster. In fact, a lot faster. Because Spider-Man, he just really, he moves.
I always thought Zero Mission played pretty quick. So if it's quicker than
it does, yeah. It does, yeah, but it's even faster than that, because instead of just running and jumping, you can just shoot a web and just pull yourself across an entire huge room, or you can just, if you just want to traverse a horizontal area really quickly, you just use the web swing, and you just, it's very easy to get from one place to another. So there's a lot of backtracking, but it's very pleasant backtracking, because it's actually fun just to move from one place to another.
So does it have does it not have teleport rooms like Castlevania usually does?
No, it doesn't.
Basically eliminate a certain amount of backtracking.
No, it doesn't have anything like that, but you can get from one side of the game to the other in probably less than a minute. Yeah. Maybe 2 minutes. So, and you don't need to go that far usually. So, and like I said, even though it does take a little bit of time to get around, because it's a very open environment, it's not just like, there are no stages. It's just this huge map that you're exploring, in Symphony of the Night or whatever. But he moves so quickly, and it's actually really fun just to go from one place to the other. And the other thing is, there's a lot of combat, and the combat is really, really well done. I usually hate fighting in Spider-Man games, because it's just like, it's just like the same 3-button combo over and over, and then you use some special move or
punch,
whatever.
Punch, punch, fall.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, it's lame. But in this one, the attacks are a lot more varied, and you actually have to use pretty much all of Spider-Man's attacks, because the enemies get harder, and not just harder, but the enemies move in different ways. Some of them are flying, some of them kind of run at you very quickly and knock you down, some of them sort of gang up on you, and so as they combine these enemies in different combinations, you kind of have to get pretty creative with how you deal with them and how you prioritize the enemies, and what that means is you pretty much have to use all of his moves. The great thing is the moves, you can web swing in the middle of combat and kind of just like swing into guys and knock them down. And, you can launch a guy up in the air, hit him a few times up in the air, and as he gets knocked away, you can shoot a web line at him and pull him back to you and keep beating him up in the air and basically juggle him in the air. And then once you finish with him, you can shoot a zip line back down to the ground and go through another enemy and knock him out too. So you can use all of the mobility abilities and mix those in with the actual combat abilities. So you're doing all this stuff kind of at the same time, and you're kind of just creating your own fighting style. It's really surprisingly fun and addictive. It didn't seem like something I would enjoy, but the combat itself, but it is actually really fun.
Yeah, I thought it would be a complete turd, to be honest with you.
It's probably one of the best DS games I've played all year. Mm-hmm. No, I requested this, because I read when Neil went out to the Activision event, he basically said it's like Metroidvania with Spider-Man, and I was like, that sounds good to me, so I figured I'd give it a try, and it is one of the best DS games of the year. It really is.
You're saying when I go out to an event, I need to say, yeah, this game was great, just to see what poor slob picks it up?
Yeah, that's a good way. I can only go on your word. But if you're lying to me, you're lying to the readers, and in that case, you should be fired.
Just make sure whoever you're going off is a vindictive soul like James. apparently still holds King of Clubs against the Galaxy or whatever.
guys, there's this awesome game called Pass the Pigs.
Let the good swine roll.
It kicks ass. It's like Metroidvania.
with pigs.
And passing them.
Okay, well, I'll speed up for these last three games. I played through episode 2 of the Penny Arcade Adventures, and it's awesome. I don't know if you guys have gotten around to it yet, but it's so fantastic. It's not that much different from episode 1, but it is improved in a few little tweaky ways. But I love the first one, so I didn't have that many problems with it. And this one's a little bit longer. The writing, I think, is probably even funnier. It's just great.
What's the subtitle of that again? On the Rain Slick Precipice of Pretension?
Of Darkness. That's the thing. It's intentionally pretentious. It's ironically pretentious. So, yeah. It's so funny, dude. There's really nothing pretentious about it when you get into it. I mean, sometimes... When you get into a battle, you always have like this big message that grows out of the middle of the screen, kind of announcing the battle. Sometimes it says big words, and sometimes it just says "oh fuck." I mean, it's so funny. It just like little tiny things like that will crack you up even halfway through the game. You think you've seen everything it's got, and you haven't. So the writing is fantastic. I mean, it was pretty brutal. Playing that and Sam and Max at the same time and going back and forth between them, because the writing in Penny Arcade is so much better. It's so much funnier. It's so much more consistently funny. I mean, the humor is so much denser. You know, like in Sam and Max, in the course of like a 5-hour episode of the game, I might laugh twice. And in Penny Arcade, I'm laughing pretty much once a minute, every minute that I play it. So it's just much, much, much better. Anyway, I downloaded Rotohex, and I kind of like it. It's really simple. It's one of the art style things, and at first I didn't know what I thought of it. Like, it seemed really hard at first, and I didn't last very long. But then playing it two or three more times, it kind of clicked very quickly for me, and I've gotten pretty good at it now. I can play for a good 10 minutes before I start to get close to dying, I think it's really simple, but I feel like it's definitely has more depth and is better designed than something like Cubello. I think it's a lot better than that.
Well, we're getting
it's
the
less flashy, but yeah, I'm glad. And actually, you guys are getting not only the art style stuff, but World of Goo on WiiWare also. So you're not going to have to ass for a disc.
I mean,
I probably
would have paid for the retail version, considering the high praise, and it supposedly would have had extra content. But yeah, I mean, it's probably for the best. I don't doubt that. They say they're hoping for December, but you know, with Nintendo schedule, you never know. Whereas with the art style games, they've been announced by Nintendo, because obviously they're publishing them. But it's nice to see them publicizing it, because they had a website and everything, like an interview with the guys from Skip and NCL.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's
way more than
we got in America.
Because it was literally like Orbient came out.
We're like, what is this?
Yeah, people didn't even know for sure what it was until they played it and thought, oh, hang on, this is Orbital, isn't it? You know, something born. But yeah, it's nice that it's getting publicity, and they say that, you know, dependent on the success of these games, that there may well be more coming. We know there's more coming for the DSi as well, so it's pretty exciting. It'd be nice to see more original ones as well, like Cubello.
Yeah,
but, you know, perhaps a little more.
I hope they're a little better than Cubello, but that's the thing with these little tiny experimental games. I mean, they're so cheap and they're so fresh and interesting that it doesn't bother me that much when one of them isn't great. You know, like Cubello,
yeah,
I don't
sure.
regret downloading it. I probably will play it again sometime. I don't mind taking a risk on it. If they're taking a risk, I'll take a risk. You know,
sure.
It's not a big risk. It's $6, a little more for you, but it's, you know,
it's actually
equaling
up rapidly with the madness in the currency market.
Okay, well, the last game I'll talk about very briefly, because I just started today, is I borrowed Dead Space from a friend, and
are you scared yet?
I'm not really finding it scary, but it is pretty much Resident Evil 4 in space. So I don't know why they didn't just call it Orgasm the game. I mean, it's like,
that's
very
not how
excited.
And little known thing, John, a number of things that end in 4 have been set in space. Critters 4 was set in space. Leprechaun 4, subtitle Leprechaun in Space, was set in space. So, you know, it kind of makes sense. I think the point is Resident Evil 4 should have been set in space. And yeah, it wasn't.
I think Hellraiser 4 also.
God, that's good. That is good. I had forgotten that one.
Yeah. It's the best one.
You have met your match, Leahy. Now yeah, fight.
I thought I'd notice. It's kind of like, it's far less obvious than the whole third ones being in 3D, apart from Freddy 6. But it's a multiple three.
Alright, so anyway, yeah, I haven't played a lot of it, but it's really good. I can already tell. It's just a very well-made game and a very interesting setting, It pretty much plays almost exactly like Resident Evil 4, which is, that's awesome to me. So I'm really excited to play more of it, yeah. But that's all I've got. Thanks for your patience. I know I had a lot, but I had to catch up a little. And so now we will take a little break. You get to listen to some music, we get to go pee, and we'll be back with DLC Mondays and your listener mail. Okay, we're back with DLC Mondays. This week we have one virtual console game, but it's a doozy, Mega Man 3 for NES. 500 points of pure love and goodness. James, this is your favorite, isn't it?
No.
It's probably my second favorite after 2. So, okay, well anyway, Mega Man 3, it is awesome. It's the first game where Mega Man could slide. It's an introduction of Proto Man. Really good levels, and definitely my favorite music of the entire series. Actually, probably some of my favorite game music of all time. It's pretty badass, yeah. And it's hard, of course. Fucking Magnet Man, dude. Okay, well...
Still can't sleep at night, John?
There's also Brain Challenge for WiiWare, 1,000 points.
This is clearly the downloadable content of the week.
Yeah, well, it's from Gameloft. They continue their robust support of the platform. And it's probably another adaptation of one of their cell phone games. But, you know, I'm surprised that Nintendo hasn't already put some kind of Brain Age, you know,
game on WiiWare. Well, I think they're holding it back for the DSi.
Well... those are ports, but I'm surprised Nintendo didn't come out pretty early on with, you know, this is our special WiiWare edition of Brain Age, you know, with different games, and it costs 10 or 15 bucks. They would have sold a ton, and especially if they're trying to get WiiWare out to you know, the Blue Ocean market who currently aren't really buying very many things from the Wii Shop channel, that would be a good way to do it. I don't know.
Well, they did take Virus Buster from Brain Age and put that on there, so...
That's true.
They haven't done a whole lot with...
No, they've done very little at all, really.
I think maybe they're just sort of...
Nintendo themselves have yet to actually develop a game for WiiWare.
Yeah.
Even the art style stuff is developed at Skip.
Virus Buster.
Not Akira.
No.
Is it Akira or Rika or something? Okay, they developed Endless.
I think it was Arika.
Your Pokemon Ranch.
That's not them. It's not Nintendo either.
That was a different company, too.
Hmm. Yeah. No.
Yep. Nintendo has not actually made anything for WiiWare, and I don't know. I guess my point is this Brain Challenge thing is kind of filling a niche that hasn't been filled already on WiiWare. So good to them. Filling another niche is Yummy Yummy Cooking Jam for WiiWare, also 1,000 points.
That
seems to be some kind of mini game thing, or it might be sort of like Diner Dash. I'm not totally clear on exactly
what the gameplay is like.
It's kind of a cooking motion gesture game. Maybe it's sort of like Cooking Mama, but I think it's the first cooking game. We have an eating game on WiiWare, but I think this is the first cooking game. So it's kind of nice to see some new kinds of games. Major League Yummy Yummy Cooking Jam.
Does it have that endorsement?
By the way, I think when we got the press release for Major League Eating, I think I might have accidentally replied to all, including Mastiff. Holy shit, this can't be real.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Hopefully they took it well.
Yeah. All right, so that's your DLC Monday. But time for listener mail, and I want to thank everybody for sending in some great questions and comments.
Yeah,
we actually have more than we can read this
week. Episode.
So.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's really been flowing in the past few days, and I'm
but
very
that
happy
doesn't
to see
mean
that.
It's
so
time
really...
to slow down now, does it?
Yeah, well, I'm sure it'll go in waves and everything, but you know, even on 1UP FM, they had to ask people to send in more emails because they're running out. So it's doesn't make me feel bad to beg and plead. And,
I pleaded. There was pleading last week. There was pleading.
Please, for the love of God, send us emails. I'll do that right now. Just please,
all right, well,
people, for the children.
We've got four this week, and we should have a good group next week, too. So please keep them coming in, and we will provide you with consistent answers to your burning questions.
So before we start, John, you have the second email.
I realize that. Thank you, James. Thank you. What would I do without you, James?
What does it start all with, right, just so we know you found it?
It's
well, Greg
Sophia.
Has the first one.
Yes.
So why don't you get
it
started?
Proceed if they've finished their little childish exchange. This is actually
10 out of 10.
It's actually from Greg from Virginia Beach. Assuming that's not a typo. It says AKA the North Sea on our forums, and he writes, "Hey RFN, I discovered the podcast a few months ago through iTunes. It's easily the one I look forward to the most each week. I enjoy hearing your opinions
or
and game recommendations."
Week.
Without them, I would have missed out on Geometry Wars Galaxies, Space Invaders Extreme, which were not on my radar until you talked about them. I also discovered the website and forums and check them every day. Anyway, here's my question. With 2008 winding down, which title that came out on Wii or DS this year did you feel didn't get the attention it deserved?
As Feature said it, I'm going to abstain from answering this question because it's a category in our Games of the Year. That is the biggest nightmare the features editor has to face every year.
Conflict of interest. I would definitely suggest Boom Blocks. Didn't get the attention it deserved from EA
from
or
a certain,
gamers.
Yeah, from certain points of view. I mean, it certainly got the positive reviews and all that sort of thing, but yeah.
What about World of Goo? Do you think World of Goo, for the quality of it, do you think that it's really gotten the kind of precedence
to deserve
attention?
Say World of Goo again, John.
World of Goo?
Exactly.
World of Goo.
Exactly.
I think the biggest obstacle for World of Goo being a big commercial success is the lack of penetration for WiiWare.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I think the average Wii owner doesn't even know what WiiWare is.
Yeah.
And they certainly haven't gone through there and browsed through the selection of games. And they don't know which ones are good and which ones aren't.
I'll give you a hint. Most aren't.
Yeah, well,
roll dice. Odds are, whichever one you just picked, not good.
It's an uneven selection, but World of Goo is absolutely phenomenal. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know that they're, you know, you have to think that with them releasing World of Goo in Europe as a download title, maybe that's related to the success of it in America. I mean, maybe they kind of made enough money selling it that they...
Well, yeah, because obviously the whole thing with that originally was to get funding. So I don't know whether perhaps if they've got a bit more money now that they can afford sort of not really buy out, but to readjust their agreement with the European publisher. And also maybe the European publisher just settled for a percentage of the downloads from Europe or something. And if it looks like it, there will be a significant amount of revenue from that, then maybe they're happy with it. So it could be a good sign.
Yeah. Or it might be that they felt like the price point they would be able to sell it at was such that it would not be profitable to.
Yeah, I mean retail. Yeah, I mean retail Wii games is tough. It's pretty tough to sell, actually. I think in the current environment, there's just so much. I mean,
it's a very crowded market.
Exactly. Very crowded with shovelware in Europe too.
Yeah, as if it's not in North America as well.
Well, I mean, we've already discussed how bad it is in Europe.
I don't know. I guess I'd have to. I don't. It's depends what circles you're talking about. Like
Europe is the home of Cocotel.
The fishing master.
With regards to the question, you know, it depends what circles you're talking about. So like with Boomblocks, I got plenty of, you know, in the critical circles, there was a lot of, you know, attention paid to it, and you know, this is really good, and all. And I guess kind of, Bangaia is really good, but that got plenty of attention in the circles you'd expect. So I don't know whether I'd say it was that deficient in attention, but I assume it sold virtually nothing. I can only assume that's true.
I think in the case of Boomblocks, the biggest offender in it not getting attention is EA for marketing it
in the most stupid
mannerism I've ever seen a game marketed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It honestly felt like they had no idea how to sell this game.
Yeah, they put it out to die.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this when we were discussing it. Just looking at the cover art, it looks like shovelware.
This must be like, can we have the ding sound for the number of times you've mentioned the cover?
There's like a monkey flying.
Oh god, it's like deja vu. Stop! Stop talking about the box.
You can't say that that didn't hurt the game.
It may well have done, but you've already made that sodding point. Shut up.
But I have to remind the listeners.
The listeners that have got Alzheimer's? What? Come on.
Carve that into stone. Put it somewhere.
All right.
Graven image of the cover.
A Boomblocks monument. Never forget. That fucking monkey.
Honestly, I think this game that I just reviewed, the Spider-Man game for DS, probably isn't going to get the attention it deserves, because people are going to lump it in with all the console versions, which are okay, you know, good at best. And I think this is actually... I haven't played the console versions, but from everything I've read, it sounds like it's actually the best of the lot.
Yeah, I think that's pretty consistent with what I've seen. I mean, it could well be kind of the reverse of Boomblocks. It says that it may well sell because of the license, because of the name. But in the critical circles, even though it gets good reviews, it's still kind of like not paid a lot of attention because it's
licensed game. There's not a lot of press play given to the DS version of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you read reviews, they're good, but it's not like an event because it's just another licensed game. It's one of several versions of a licensed game. You know, it's never going to make any big headline. You know, I mean, the biggest headline it can make is that it's surprisingly good. I suppose.
So, what about a non... What if we went from like a more traditional Wii game? I'm fishing for nominees here, people. Give me something.
Yeah, well,
more traditional.
Well, something not like Bloombox or World of Goo, but like a more traditional, what we're used to as
like Rayman Raving Rabbids TV Party. I'm not sure that one's really going to be overappreciated or underappreciated.
Well, in that case, they sort of shot themselves in the foot by like, you can play it with your ass. Well, which is appropriate because the first game was ass.
No, they. That's a great gimmick that they've put on that one. I mean, it's something to actually differentiate it, which the second one lacked. So, I don't begrudge that.
There's an awful lot of balance
of
boards
hardware
out there at this point. You know, it sold something like 9 million copies, and that's excluding the first few months of Japan. So it's got to be more than 10 million worldwide.
So this may be a weird choice, but I think Smash Brothers might not get the attention it deserves at the end of the year, because to me it's so easily forgotten
Yeah, it was. It was
like
really...
I feel like it's been so long since I played it.
Yeah.
I don't even think about it anymore. I don't even think about it as being a 2008 game.
No.
And when it comes time to vote for Game of the Year or whatever, I feel like even though I enjoyed it so much when I first got it, it probably won't be a strong contender.
Well, it's interesting though, because I mean, I'm one of these people that still play or been playing it regularly, but there's plenty of evidence that there's a lot of people out there like that, like what I've mentioned before, Totillo running the numbers on the Nintendo Channel stuff. Smash Brothers is just so ridiculously out in front in terms of the usage, and it's still growing steadily even to this day. Where were we talking, like 9 months?
And it's not even any good online.
Because it's not, people aren't playing it online, I'm sure. I mean, I've had some decent
games.
They're
just playing
online.
It, period.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this is just the stats go online, but these are not online stats. These are just of its usage that then gets uploaded to the Nintendo channel, and Totillo's breaking them down. And the point is that its life is way beyond anything else on Wii. So there's a lot of people for me, I was a regular Melee player right up until the end, and this kind of seamlessly slipped in, sort of like the end of The Shining. You've always been the caretaker here, Mr. Torrance. You know, so Smash Brothers was always Brawl, you know, at this point.
But it feels like Brawl was much more publicly talked about after its initial lifespan.
Well, like, you mean Melee?
Like there's not a lot of chatter about.
I don't know. I mean, feel like Brawl was more talked about after so heavily hyped before. I mean, the marketing for Brawl was so brilliant.
Yeah.
They knew not only how to announce the game to get all the traditional gamers, all the old school fans of Melee and the original game excited, but how to maintain that excitement up to the day it launched.
Yeah.
With these daily updates. Every single weekday they do these updates, even when they're shitty. It's just like, it's constantly in your mind every day. That was my ritual, was what did they announce today?
Yeah, I used to stay up late, and it would come out at like 3 a.m. my time. I would stay up late and go to work the next morning, just dead tired.
It was kind of,
exactly.
Yeah, it was kind of,
I did the same
in the morning here, but...
Yeah, but it was like 1 a.m. your time, Johnny.
Maybe I feel, the reason I feel a little underwhelmed by the reception after it was released is just because there's no way it could have matched the crazy intensity of the hype before it released. Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing they could have done to maintain that.
I mean, I guess the thing
and
that...
Especially
that,
in my mind, not having like a regular group, like most of the people... The local people who play games that I know don't really like Smash Brothers for some reason, and so I haven't had any kind of like perpetual opponent.
Yeah.
But I do have a friend coming to visit over Thanksgiving, and he loves Melee. I don't think he's played Brawl at all, but he's definitely going to want to try it. And if he gets into it, we may end up playing a shitload of Brawl over the holidays. And I haven't touched it in 6 months.
What's the worst Brawl control scheme?
The worst?
Probably Wii Mode on its own, really. It's a bit...
Yeah, give him that one.
Yeah.
Give him that one. This is all I got, man. You have to play it like this.
I mean, I guess if I had to nail down the legacy of Brawl, it's just that, you know, as someone who's still playing Melee right up to it regularly, and then obviously you go through the phase where it's like, oh, wow, all the new stuff, and you're discovering it and all that. But once you settle into just playing it regularly again, there is the fact that it is, for me, significantly more fun than Melee, just to play and play and play. After the novelty's worn off, and you've seen everything loads and loads of times, the new items, the balancing... And the visuals, even I really think the visual improvement's been undersold. People say, "Oh, it looks exactly like Melee." It does not look exactly Melee. It's a pile.
It looks way a lot better.
It's an awesome.
I mean,
looking
that's
game.
Just total nonsense.
I'll give you that it's more fun, but I don't think it's going to have the same legacy as Brawl did. I mean, as Melee did.
Well, Melee obviously,
I think its
legacy
has been really soiled by the online problems.
Yeah,
and
the online.
That's a big part of it for me.
That's such a shame.
I wanted to play
it
online
so
bad, and it's just the online experience is so atrocious that it really sours the game, and it kind of makes me forget how good the game is aside from the online mode.
Yeah.
Because I don't really get a chance. I don't really have a reason to play it outside of the online mode. Because again, I don't have a roommate anymore, so I don't have somebody to play it with every single afternoon when I get home.
Upside, if the online had been really good, was so enormous.
Yeah,
which is what I think
a lot of us were banking on. Really, like
I was kind of banking on it too. It's just a massive missed opportunity, and it makes me so sad. But it doesn't mean the game is bad. No. Obviously, it's a great game. But it's not a game that I'm playing anymore because the online doesn't work. And that's why it's probably the biggest, and James, write this down for your awards feature. It's probably the biggest disappointment for me all year.
Oh, that one's already won.
I'm not even going to allow voting for it. It's how bad the online is, because it could have really changed. I mean, I would probably be playing it every single day, even today, if the online actually worked.
It's true. It is. It's an enormous missed opportunity. But I still think you've got a point that, in some sense, you know, there's such a great disparity between the build-up and then the aftermath of, in terms of the attention it's been getting. And timing is an issue with Game of the Year. I guess Resident Evil 4 came out like early, and that maintained its sort of esteem throughout that year because it was so good.
Yeah, like,
but it didn't have broken online.
Well, obviously not.
That's the thing. I mean, it didn't have anything to tarnish that image, and Brawl does, unfortunately. I think that's kind of the difference. But
I think it kind of got caught up in a bunch of other really big games that sort of come in and sort of pushed over top of it.
Well, Mario Kart, and then came in sort of after. Wii Fit.
Yeah.
Well, sales terms, they certainly, you know, they've gone, as well as Brawl sold, it's already sold as well as Melee, which was the best-selling GameCube game, and that had a long tail for a GameCube game, really.
It
was
It just kept selling.
But
it was the Halo of GameCube.
But Mario Kart, it was still selling. Mario Kart and Wii Fit have already kind of taken it out to the woodshed. And
you know, Mario Kart is probably going to be the best-selling game of the year on any platform.
It seems like it could be the best-selling game on the system. I mean, if you eliminate Wii Sports with the sort of, you know, pack-in factor.
I think Wii Play is probably.
Oh yeah, well that too. If you eliminate that as well, the pack-in, like with the controller, obviously it's got a wheel, but you know that's a bit. So it's not that dissimilar, but it's just insane how well it continues to sell. I get it in Europe because there's a big driving game thing here, so it's like this weird bridge between the two, like the family driving game. It's like two kind of really immensely commercially successful genres, like family party games and driving games, kind of into one with the whole Wii phenomenon. I get it, but I'm surprised at just how robust it's doing in America. I'm really surprised by that.
Yeah, it just sells and sells and sells.
It was in the NPD top 10 last month, right?
Yeah, every month.
It's still in the top 10 every week, it's the polar opposite
of Smash Brothers, because the online is so good in Mario Kart, but the game itself, I don't really have much interest in playing anymore. Even though I could, you know, I could be playing that every single day online. It works extremely well. I just don't care to. I just don't, you know, I'm done with it.
Sure.
Anyway, we really got to move on, but it's a great question, Greg from Virginia Beach, and I want to welcome you to our website and to our podcast, and I'm really glad you found it through iTunes. It's good to hear that people are finding us through iTunes and that's being effective, and I just want to say, for not only you, Greg, but everybody else listening, we would greatly appreciate if you have access to iTunes, going on there and writing a review of the podcast, because it helps people like Greg find the podcast and convinces them to actually check it out. Yeah. So we have a lot of great reviews from over the years where people have left on there. If you haven't written a review, we'd really appreciate it if you took a couple minutes to do that. It would be great. All right, Mr. Lindemann.
All right, Sophia writes, what is the most disturbing or scary thing you've encountered in a game that was unexpected considering the type of game it was, like a Mario game?
That fucking shark in Mario 64.
That's a good question.
I don't know. I meant to think about this ahead of time.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky.
It's the kind of thing you have to rack your memory.
Well, there's the piano, too.
Ghost house that in Mario 64.
Yeah. Fuck that piano.
That's a good one.
That was definitely the most eerie ghost house in a Mario game, the 64 one. The music was quite sort of oppressive and that crazy little carousel at the bottom and all. It was all kind of weird. Yeah, that was. Disturbing is probably stretching it, but you know, it was more so than like the ones in Mario World.
Well, I wouldn't call it scary, but there are a couple disturbing things in the Pikmin games. there's one, you know, actually, do you remember? I think it's in the first Pikmin, that sort of like ostrich.
Yes.
Eel thing that comes out of the ground.
Yeah.
Poof. Scares the shit out of me. It's like really difficult to kill, and it kind of pops up out of nowhere. It's probably the hardest enemy in the game.
They just come out of nowhere.
I seem to remember there's almost like something about the sound effects it makes that are really kind of creepy and like unexpected. I don't know. There was another thing in Pikmin. I think there was one time I killed an enemy, and I actually felt bad after I killed it. Because there was something about the way it died, like the animation or the sound it made when it died. And I was like, wow, that's kind of like, I feel bad for killing that thing now.
Well, I'm not sure I would call it scary or disturbing, but definitely unexpected. We've talked about it before. Is the ending in Wind Waker?
Yes.
Jammed the sword right into his head.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
That's more shocking.
That's kind of that's kind of unexpected. It's very violent.
How many people listening to this saw that and then went over to the game box to check the ESRB rating?
Descriptor.
I mean, it is pretty jolting. Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah, I get one weird. It's not very scary or disturbing, but the whole Rosalina thing in Galaxy was kind of weird. Like, it was kind of really sad. Like, more sad than I would have thought.
Yeah.
That basically her mother died and she went into space and kind of died herself, but was reborn as this galactic ageless thing. It's kind of... When you think about it, it's kind of grim, you know?
Yeah. Now, I know for me, for my money, I would include just all of Choaniki. The entire goddamn game. This is very disturbing.
That should be fully expected.
Game of the year, downloadable content. Choaniki.
Exactly. Yeah, but,
I guess other Zelda stuff.
Yeah, like, actually, how about the mask salesman in Majora's Mask?
Yeah, he's weird.
That dude is so creepy.
He has that staccato thing where he suddenly changes position.
Yeah.
Without animation.
Yeah, well, the camera angles are great on him because the camera really makes him a lot scarier than he would be otherwise. It's not scary, but unsettling, I think, is probably the best thing. I mean, there's something
on his face.
There's something off about him. And the way he talks to you, it's like very affectionate, inappropriately affectionate the way he talks to Link.
He's creepily chirpy. Obviously the way it's very limited animation, but the way they kind of sell it with that. And do you remember the guy who is turned into a Gibdo and his daughter is trying to sort
that is really messed up.
That's quite
how about the bug girl in Twilight Princess, bug princess? Creeps the shit out of me.
There's some other stuff in Twilight. It's almost like the one of the big cutscenes early-ish in the game about power. And Ilya's eyes turning white, and she's gonna stab Link, but basically kills her first, and then runs towards the Triforce, and then there's upside down Ilya's floating through the air, laughing at you, and it's a bit David Lynch.
He's having a nightmare, and they don't really explain why he had the nightmare or what it means. It's just kind of freaky.
But I'm gonna go with the Gibdo in the closet because that was messed up because that really just came out of nowhere. She's got her dead father in the closet.
Well, you could save him, though, right? You use the song of healing and you turn him into take the mask, the Gibdo away as a mask, and then he's okay.
Right, but it did sort of just like, what in the hell?
Yeah, this kind of sums up sort of Majora's Mask. It's kind of quirky.
Yeah, Majora's Mask was a very dark
It's kind
dark
of quirky
game.
And funny, but it's melancholy and kind of disturbing.
Yeah, there's
kind of a lot of black comedy in Majora's Mask.
Yeah, the whole thing with the couple, with the way he was turned into a little boy, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was unusually...
Man, that is a weird game.
Yeah. It was really weird.
It was actually very story-driven for a Zelda game at that time, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And
it
wasn't just one story, either. There was a lot of stories driving a larger plot, which is something that I don't think they've done in any game from Nintendo since or before.
I still think Majora's Mask is the best Zelda game.
Yeah, see, I have
a lot
actually.
Of reasons.
I find it difficult to reconcile with some of the other ones in terms of if you want dungeons, obviously it's not going to give it to you. So in some ways, even though it's a Zelda game, and obviously it's really similar to Ocarina of Time, I find they give me different things, and therefore comparing them in some sort of direct way is almost impossible
like...
for me. It's incommensurable, it's like apples and oranges. Kind of almost. It seems weird to say about something that's from the same franchise, but I really feel that it is that different in a way.
It is very different.
See, I feel like the game was almost designed in a way of saying, look how versatile the game world we built for Ocarina of Time is.
Yeah, they just
look
did
at
what
we can do with
it. Yeah. Well, I guess, do we move on?
Yeah. So, James, you have the next question, please.
All right, so, Austin writes, something I've noticed increasingly creeping into reviews these days is the concept of comparative reviews, which we just did. Where the reviewer
it's
seems
not a
to
review,
delight in,
though, is it?
Where the reviewer seems to delight in docking points or mocking the game, not because the game itself is unenjoyable, but because they either feel it didn't evolve the genre, or in the case of franchise games, evolve the franchise, or stack up against similar games in the same genre. Do you feel this is a reasonable way to approach reviewing the process, or should critics review games as singular experiences, independent of any other work?
Well, I mean,
what say you, reviews editor?
Well, yeah. I think a lot of times, and I see this in some of the reviews that are submitted for our site, you kind of walk a fine line, because I always tell people, you know, because there are some people on site who they routinely say, well, you know, you could play, you know, this game sucks, the one that they happen to be reviewing. They'll say, this game sucks. You really should be playing this game or that game. And while that is true, well, the thing is that while that is true, I tell them, review the game for what it is, not what it isn't. So I think that,
There's a tension there, because obviously on the one hand you would like to see something reviewed on its own merits, you know, and for people who have not
or
played,
lack thereof,
or yeah, whatever there is contained therein, and you know, you people may not have the same context as you, so speaking to them exclusively in that context is not going to help them. It's not going to be informative to them. So you need to take a step back and review it sort of straight down the line to, you know, to a pretty great extent, in order to, you know, be able to connect with as many and be useful for as many people as possible. But on the other hand, there's going to be a lot of people that do have a similar context, and therefore if one were to eliminate those kinds of comparisons entirely, if you're able to make them, then you're not really serving those people as well as you could, because there is an opportunity cost with buying games, and they might like to know, well, if I'm going to buy one of these, which one should it be? And therefore the comparison is relevant, it's informative, and it's useful. So
absolutely.
I just think you have to be able to separate them, you know, and explain it as fully as possible. And so, which is just one more reason why, you know, in the end of the day, you have to read the text. Because if someone says, well, this is all well and good, but I'm giving it a 6 because it's not as good as this game, that game, or the other game, then some people, if you just look at the 6, might not realise why it's getting that score, and may sort of infer things from that that aren't really, you know, valid. Whereas if you read the text and you can understand the reasons for the score, you may still be able to say to yourself, this is something worth buying for me. And then, even though it wasn't a glowing review, it was informative to you in making a purchase decision.
Well, yeah, I think that's just it. As writers for this site, our job is to inform our readers. And in some cases, that might mean bringing up things that aren't directly related to the review, like another game in the same genre. Mm-hmm. Knowing full well that the reader might not know about this game you're mentioning. You might be bringing this game up for the first time to the reader, and by comparing it to the game you're reviewing, they might say, oh, well, some of the elements here sound interesting to me, but they say this game's better. Maybe I should go research this game. You're giving the reader the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that's information too. But I mean, I think the main thing is just not to be too leveraged on it. I think it's perfectly valid, but as long as you sort of separate it out a bit and try and assess it.
Well, yeah, I mean, imagine trying to review the what's the name of that Disney published monster collecting game?
Spectrobes.
Yeah. Imagine trying to review Spectrobes without using the context of Pokemon.
Exactly, it doesn't work.
You can't do it.
I think it's totally fair in that case, because it is essentially a Pokemon clone.
Yeah, when you talk about close substitutes, so, you know.
Well, at that point, it becomes, okay, it's a Pokemon clone, but is it a good Pokemon clone?
Well, I think at that point you have to say, what does it do that Pokemon doesn't? And I think you do have to mention that in the review. I think
the other thing is, if it is a good Pokemon clone, is that good enough?
Yes.
Is that worth? Mm. Is it even worth playing?
Yeah,
I mean, just because it clones another game, well,
it doesn't do something that Pokemon doesn't that makes its existence worthwhile.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to be comparative in order to answer that question.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to read the review and they're going to want that answer.
I think it's pretty much entirely valid as long as it's fully explained. You know, it's just like, rather than just, well, this game's whatever because it's not as good as this, the end. You know, that's the real problem that I have.
And is if someone said, this game sucks just because it's not Pokemon.
Well, and then
well, of
and
course,
in some
nothing
cases,
is Pokemon, you know? It's like you can't take the best game in a genre and say everything else sucks just because it's not that game.
Yeah, and of course some people who may be so entirely in love with a certain genre that, you know, they don't want to just play the best one. They, if there's one that's not quite as good, but they want to experience it, they will not want to know whether it's worth experiencing in that sort of site. So some sort of, at some point, stepping back as much as one can, and obviously it's very difficult in certain cases to assess its sort of absolute quality such as you can, it is worth doing, you know, just provide as much context and perspective as you can. And I think the real danger, though, is where you get some of these non sequitur comparisons. For instance, people invoking WarioWare when they're reviewing WarioLand Shake. That's irrelevant. You know, that's the but people did. I've read these reviews. I've read, and it's like, that's irrelevant. And if that's influencing your score, then, and you know what that part of it really, I mean, you know, that is the polar opposite to the, oh, it is, but there are others, like, for instance, Yoshi Touch and Go comparisons with Yoshi's Island or whatever, again, irrelevant. It's a high score game. That's like comparing Metroid Prime Pinball to Metroid Prime. It's ridiculous.
hey, if Metroid Prime Pinball had been contained in the original Metroid Prime, I would have beaten it.
Okay.
What?
You would have? Why would that have changed whether you beat it?
Because I got bored of Metroid Prime.
Yeah. Did you beat Metroid NES?
Yes.
That was unlockable, isn't it? But you see what I mean. The point is, with these close substitutes is one thing, but it's sometimes, for whatever reason, and maybe it's the reviewer's own personal context or it's some facile nonsense, you get comparisons which are not pertinent, and then that really does... Then you're left saying, well, hang on a minute, what is this review worth? If its frame of reference is so entirely divorced from the actual game itself, then what's the point of it?
But see,
let me go back to the question that Austin asked, because there was another part of it where he's talking about comparing the game to other games that came before in the same franchise and basically criticizing it because it doesn't do anything new.
Madden.
I think it's an interesting question. Yeah, Madden. It's an interesting question, and a lot of it comes down to the personal preference of the reviewer, because if the reviewer is the kind of person who really just kind of wants a fresh coat of paint on the same old thing, you know, maybe that's fine with that reviewer, and maybe there are a lot of people who read the review who basically are looking for the same thing. Then again, I think it's totally valid for, say, if I reviewed a Madden game, I would probably say, you know, that's a bad example because I haven't played Madden in years, but if I played Madden every year, if I was very well versed in the Madden lore, and I got the brand new one, and it's pretty much exactly the same thing with a different year on the box,
and a roster
and
update.
I said, you know, I'm giving this a bad score because it's the same thing. I mean, IGN did this with their Winter Olympics 3D hockey review on N64.
Yeah.
Where it came out 6 months after Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey. It was exactly the same thing, except they changed the colors on the uniforms and they changed the title of the game. It's the same fucking game, and IGN gave it a 0. And the text of their review was, "We'll write a new review when Midway makes a new game." And I absolutely agree with them. I mean, if you've already played the other one and you play this new one and it does nothing new, I mean, that's an extreme example, but even backing off that, if there's just nothing new and you are bored, then you didn't like the game and you should score it that way. Yeah. You should review it that way. Forget scores. I mean, you should basically say, this game bored me. I've played this before. Well, that is a completely legitimate criticism.
And as a reviewer, you're trying to advise the public on buying the game. Well, if someone bought the last iteration,
that's part of
this game,
your job, yes.
And this newest iteration does nothing different, you should warn them. This game does nothing different. Save your goddamn money.
Yeah. I mean, you also have to spell out what kind of reviewer you are when we touched on that. You know, I mean, if you are a Madden hardcore, say that, you know, or if you're brand new to this series, because I know that, like, there's been some games that I've given Greg where he's been completely new to the series, and that's totally
fine. Hurry up, Hedgehog.
I think of that.
John
one,
didn't give me that, though.
No,
get him in.
He took that bullet himself.
Get him up at the Hague or something.
The one I'm thinking of is that...
it's Final Fantasy Tactics A2.
Yes, the Grimoire of the Rift or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And that game, Gray had never played one of those games before, I don't think.
I'd never played a Final Fantasy game, and I'd never played a turn-based strategy game. It was a double dip.
Yeah, and I mean, and that was completely fine with me, just as long as he told people that. because then they know where he's mm-hmm. coming from.
Sorry, turn-based RPG. Right. I have played Advance Wars, and so it's not quite that bad. But
yeah, if I had reviewed that game, I would have probably taken a completely different approach to it because yeah. I did play the first Final Fantasy Tactics Advance
and you reviewed
on GBA. Didn't really like it that much on GBA, and it sounds like the DS version is pretty much exactly the same thing.
Mm, just yeah. But obviously, that's just something I couldn't. That's something that's informative for people that like this kind of game.
Of course. That's why it's good to have multiple perspectives, you know. Yeah. Reviewers have different backgrounds just like the readers do.
Yeah, it's impossible for me to channel that knowledge and experience of that game into, you know, what this is doing. That's why it's always best to read multiple reviews also, and hopefully sufficiently enough of them will be well articulated that you'll get this sort of breadth of perception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I wish certain reviewers, you know, I wish that they would have kind of spelled out what sort of player they are when they were reviewing Wii Music. You know, I mean, I just think that's a title where it's like if you're like, yeah, I'm a complete hardcore Rock Band 2 player, and I think that Wii Music is absolute crap. Well, I think you should let people know that because so they know where you're coming from.
But see, none of our reviews did that though. Our reviews didn't go out there and say this game's absolute crap.
Oh no,
what
no,
we were expecting.
Not ours. I don't mean ours.
Oh, okay, yeah, because ours actually went out there, and I think Nick did a review, right?
I thought ours gave it a more than fair shake.
I don't think John
Absolutely.
Was calling out anyone on staff. He was on about reviewers in the wider gaming media.
Yes. let's just say the wider media.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No, I thought our review of Wii Music was absolutely very heavy, very easy, even
very heavy-handed?
Very heavy-handed. I was getting my terms mixed up, sorry. But
even-handed or even lax, I might say, based on what I played of it. But I definitely probably would have gone a different direction if I had reviewed Wii Music because from what I played of it, I didn't like it at all. But, you know, I'm glad that Nick got some pleasure out of it, obviously, and hopefully that speaks to some people.
It does sound to me like an extensive experience in the sense that it's not something that's necessarily that immediate game. So, it doesn't interest me whatsoever. However good it would have been, I don't think it would have interested me. But it seems to me that it's that kind of game where it's kind of over a longer period with friends mucking around, sort of feedback, kind of some sort of mutual thing going on over a longer period. It's not good. I couldn't imagine it's got like instant playability like a rhythm game because it's not a rhythm game.
Like Wii Sports?
That's the thing. I mean, Wii Music really is very different from the other Wii sort of branded games. I really think it is. And there was something very interesting actually in one of Chris Kohler's articles about it. Was called Miyamoto Struggles to Sell the Inscrutable Wii Music Game. And
the sales have not been that great.
They've not been that great, and it's actually getting outsold week on week now in Japan by Rhythm Tengoku Gold, which obviously has a way bigger hardware install base to work with, but it came out in July, and it's already sold a million copies, and yet it's now selling more on a week-to-week basis than that. But apparently, the composer, was it Totake, the guy that did the, you know, sort of Animal Crossing music and all that sort of stuff, he directed the game, even though he has no video game directing experience at all.
What the
interesting. I just thought it was really interesting. It's in this story, and it hasn't really been widely reported. I just think it's fascinating that Miyamoto said, basically, you know, well, I thought he could make the transition from composer to director quite smoothly, and it was actually a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I mean, I think that also comes to the fact the team making that game had, what, 4 projects on its plate at one time?
Well, I don't know. See, I don't know whether it was that team.
Well, I mean, the
Iguchi,
producer,
Iguchi was a
producer.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, but he wasn't the producer, because apparently he had Tezuka and Miyamoto all working on it in the similar sort of capacity, assisting.
Yeah. Iguchi is definitely kind of an oversight kind of guy. I mean, he's used to managing multiple projects.
Yeah, but
time.
I mean,
still.
Wii Music is something that was in development in one form or another since at least early 2006. So it's not like they were on a crunch schedule here.
Yeah, it seems now that it was more like they didn't just wait, or that it was just troubled. I mean, that's what it sounds like, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it seems like they kind of slogged through it, and they probably had to up in the tea table a couple times until they finally came up with an idea that they could actually finish.
That's fascinating that you'd actually put someone in charge of, you know, what has proven to be like their big holiday title is made by someone who's never made video games before.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not surprised Miyamoto would do that, because that's basically how Miyamoto got started.
Yeah.
He was a staff artist, and normally
they kind of make the progress slower than that. Like Koizumi, he worked on manuals, as we said a couple of weeks ago, for Link to the Past and stuff, and he gradually kind of worked to the point that he's directing Mario Galaxy. But that didn't happen.
Right, and Onuma took over the Zelda series kind of gradually.
He was like one of the lead guys on Ocarina, but in the design area, but then he became director on Majora's Mask and ever since. So there was a bridge.
And went apeshit crazy.
Yeah, but there was a bridge there.
Did his best
there's
work,
no
I
bridge
say.
Here. It's just like, oh, you've just, you know, composed music for, like, I think Yoshi's Story and Animal Crossing and, you know, a lot of Nintendo games, and then now he's directing a game. It's very odd, I think.
Yeah, that is interesting. Well, we need to move on to the last question. This one is from my good friend Kevin here in Colorado. And Kevin writes, when will we see Wiimote head tracking in a game? I heard that they had a head tracking demo set up at TGS. Have any of you guys ever tried this out?
Nope.
Have you?
Well, none of us went to TGS.
You can have those LED goggles, right? You just have like a pair of glasses with the... like the equivalent of the sensor bar hanging off the side, and then the Wii remote is set stable, and then so basically what you do is like gluing the sensor bar to your head, and then if you move your head then it interprets it from that.
Yeah, I haven't tried this myself, but I've seen a video on YouTube or something about it, and this guy kind of, he programmed a demo to show it off, and then he made like this helmet that had LEDs on it, you know, to replace the sensor bar, and it is weird because, you know, you're basically putting the remote at the TV or wherever you're looking at, and then you're putting the sensor bar on your person, so you, for whatever reason, you have to kind of reverse the situation. But it was really cool. Even watching a video of someone do it, I could tell how cool it was. And you know, Boomblox originally was supposed to have some head tracking minigame built in, and they took it out at the last minute.
That's weird, isn't it?
I bet Nintendo told them don't do that because they didn't want people breaking their sensor bar or whatever, or confusing people about how to use it.
I guess it wasn't
like a major mode. It was just kind of a show off.
I guess
thing,
it would have
like
been like
Mikino
a total Easter egg. Like, it would have been pretty hidden, and it would have been for those in the know. They could have done it. You know, I don't think it would.
Yeah, but I think Nintendo kind of said, you know, we don't want people doing that.
I can totally imagine Nintendo being that way about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe they just decided they couldn't find a way to put the little thing on the monkey's head on the box and decided it's not working.
Oh, jeez Louise! I never want to be that again. Ever.
But, I don't know, don't you guys think this is one direction Nintendo could take with the next Wii, or the next big control revolution in Wii? Because say if they do the remote thing again with Wii 2, but it's an upgraded remote, it has built-in Motion Plus or some advanced form of that, and it has a couple new features, and maybe one of the things it has is it has built-in LEDs in addition to the kind of infrared camera sort of thing that it has now.
I mean, yeah, if it,
so maybe it kind of is a bi-directional system, and then your sensor bar is not only a couple of infrared LEDs out on the side, but then in the middle it has its own sort of infrared sensor, the same as the Wii remotes now do. So now they have a bi-directional system, and you can do it either way, and it'd be a fairly simple thing to just kind of tell, you know, give people a little thing they can attach the remote to themselves, and now they've got head tracking with no extra hardware.
Yeah,
that could be a really cool show-off thing.
I mean, there's two things, isn't there? Just obviously they'd probably want some sort of flagship software application for it in a game somewhere, and then just the appropriate way of formalizing it, so it does, you know, so it doesn't seem too kind of weird or intimidating or just sort of silly, and they sort of get it right, and then you know, like you said, if it's kind of, if they feel that there wouldn't be that sort of unapproachability up to it, and you know that they could, then maybe they'll do that. Because, I mean, the applications are really quite interesting. Although, I suppose, somewhat limited in terms of, you know, if you're moving your head around, you have to stay looking at the telly when you're playing.
Yeah, or even if you move your whole body around, you know, there's a limited space that you have to work with. They don't know how big your room is that that you're doing this in, and you know, like if you move too far to the side, you can like you said, you're no longer able to see the TV. So
right.
I mean, I think it would have to be very fine tuned. It'd be for subtle movements, but the 3D effect of depth perception when you do head tracking is startling. And I would encourage our listeners, if you have not seen one of these head tracking videos of the demonstrations, you really owe it to yourself to go check this out. It's very cool. Very cool. Just go to YouTube and look up Wii head tracking and you'll find something on it. It's so cool. But is there a real gaming application for it?
I don't know.
I think there probably is, but
what kinds of games?
I don't know
though?
What it would be.
Like a first person shooter or something like that, or like an adventure game, or
I don't know, it could be specific. I mean, maybe it's like an embellishment that you would add on to a kind of game that we're already familiar with, you know? Yeah, maybe it is like a first person shooter where you're doing the primary camera movement by waving your remote around, but you have another remote on your head. Special kid helmet, and that's for like peeking out around corners when you don't actually want to move your whole body.
Yeah.
That's just for controlling the character's head.
Yeah.
Independent of the body. So you don't have to use it all the time.
Yeah, can I just say right
but
now,
it's like an extra feature. Yeah, you would, but I mean it could be really cool. And like I said, I mean Nintendo might be able to find a little more convenient way than attaching it to your actual head. But
yeah.
I just have this
image of like a Wii remote strapped to my forehead sticking out.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing.
Maybe it's like an earpiece.
Wii remote stuck to his forehead sticking
out. All right, think about this.
Powder up there with the Xbox coming out like a unicorn's horn.
All right. But Xbox 360, it every single one of them, almost every single one, comes with this headset for Xbox Live. You could very easily put in a couple sensors in the top of a headset that would be very inconspicuous.
But we know,
and it's the kind of thing that you might be wearing anyway while you're playing a
game.
But
we know Nintendo believes the microphone should be a communal experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it doesn't even have a microphone. Maybe it's your head-tracking headset. But it doesn't have to be this big, bulky thing, you know.
Obviously the way it works now is just with the remote on the side, and the chap's got the little LEDs on his glasses, which is, you know, not much. I mean, I guess they could, like, formalize it with, like, a docking station or something, maybe. Like, some sort of special docking station to put it in next to your telly to make sure it's sort of, you know, holds steady. And they just sort of say, yeah, well, you know, when you want to do head tracking, you put it in there, and then you just have some sort of little like goggles basically with LEDs on, and there you are. But I just struggled to see Nintendo, because a first person kind of thing, and obviously like first person things not that big in Japan, how Japan centric they are.
It is an innately first person kind of feature, of course.
And that part of it makes you think that if someone's going to be a trailblazer, it may well not be Nintendo.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is a very cool technology.
I mean, Nintendo itself is still a rather conservative company.
Mostly. I mean, they've been very successful with their somewhat more adventurous strategies.
Yes,
recently,
Iwata has made them a lot of money by occasionally rolling the dice.
Well, you know, it's very much against the conventional wisdom to re-release a GameCube, but smaller with a new controller. But
you're gonna get hate for that. It's at least 2 to 3 times more powerful than the GameCube
with duct tape.
Stick to your talking points with duct tape.
Wii is about 1.5 times stronger, and that's in the technical documentation for Wii developers. I've read it.
Nice.
That's Nintendo's words. Wii is about 1.5 times as powerful as GameCube.
It is more efficient though, but do they factor that in?
It has more efficient memory management, and it has more
because
RAM.
It's
much more efficiently built. Obviously, the form factor is much smaller, so they've shrunk all the components. And
the point is that was a bold decision from a certain point of view,
absolutely.
And that's worked. So maybe we shouldn't overstate their conservatism, but I just think that more the Japan-centric element. You know, that this was, you know, I believe their primary motive with what they did with DS and Wii was about the Japanese market, and it's very nicely worked everywhere else, but that was the cradle, and obviously it's really worked in Japan because they're just annihilating everything in sight, and therefore something that's first-person-centric is just, you know, we know. I mean, apparently Mario Galaxy is too much for them or something, so I think you're out of luck there.
Well, the thing is, I think it's interesting that you should say that, because now that I think about it, when I think of all of the first-person games on the Wii, Are there? I mean, they're all made by Western devs, aren't they? Like almost all of them.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Metroid Prime being in Texas.
You could say that for first-person games on any system.
Yeah. Well, they are just more popular in the West, you know, and they have typically been developed by Western developers.
But just because it's that way now doesn't mean it always has to be. I mean,
no,
if you look at the dawn of online gaming in Japan, it has exploded in the past couple of years with things like Monster Hunter. And, you know, Nintendo is now left a little behind the curve when it comes to online games. Now that is the big thing in Japan, and Nintendo's not really doing anything to take advantage of that. So it may be the next thing after online games is first-person games. Maybe Japan finally decides that this is cool. It's the new fad, right? And they sort of get accustomed to it, and it becomes now a part of their gaming diet the way it already is outside of Japan.
But I just
it's
think
totally
it's
possible.
Yeah, I just think it's really interesting, though, that, you know, like, we in the West, we look at the Wii and we're like, wow, this would be perfect for first-person shooters. But in Japan, they don't look at it that way.
Well, yeah, because it's they're not so bothered about the genre in general, are they? And that obviously is a problem for the Western markets to some extent, because, you know, if Nintendo's not driving something on the Wii, and then third parties, you know, obviously that the first person shooter market does have a heavy overlap with people that appreciate graphics and online functionality. Then obviously they're going to be more inclined to explore it on the 360 and the PS3. That's why there has been this pretty big chasm for first-person shooters on Wii up until now.
Up until the conduit saves us all. Okay, well, we need to wrap this show up. Thanks for great questions, you guys and girls. And we look forward to doing this again next week with even more questions. And you can send all of those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And until next week, we will see you on forums.
So long.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Is everybody here?
No.
Oh.
I'm the only one here.
Oh.
Just me.
You are not alone. I am here with you.
You're here now.
Though we're far apart, you're always in my heart.
I don't need to hear that. That is definitely not the stinger.
It's Michael Jackson.
Exactly.